mean.
Chapter 28. From behind the yellow police tape, I watched Agent Santos and her new sidekick from the domestic violence section. They were pretending not to notice me. I was pretending that it didn't bother me. A cold shoulder from Detective Reyes was especially hard for me to swallow. Many career prosecutors in our office, myself included, did a stint in domestic violence somewhere along the line. Some of my best work had been with Reyes, the whole gamut of cases: battery, sexual assault, violation of injunctions, stalking. The head of domestic crime had been one of my biggest supporters for promotion to homicide, where I went on to prosecute 4 cases of uxoricide. All involved infidelity. 2 were cheaters whose wives had promised to take everything in the divorce. 1 couldn't handle it when his wife said she was leaving him for another man. A 4th was just bizarre. A guy who liked to masturbate while watching his wife engage in rough sex, and who did nothing to stop a roided-up weightlifter from strangling her to death. Aside from cases involving a confession, they were among the easiest convictions I'd ever won. They all got the death penalty. I tried not to seem angry as Ridd walked in my direction. He stopped at the tape. He looked exhausted, as if he'd just gone 10 rounds with a heavyweight champion of the world. Santos wants to see my press release. The champion had just landed another blow, and this time it was on me. I was the author of that release.
What did you tell her?
That it was in the car.
Are you going to show it to her?
He glanced across the road in the direction of Santos, then back. I can't really say no. Santos is the task force coordinator for the Cutter investigation. I've been dealing with the fears and realities all day long, but it still chilled me to hear him speak of a serial killer in such matter-of-fact terms.
Is that where you're coming out?
I asked.
Angelina belongs in the Cutter investigation?
No, Abe, we're not there yet. We may never get there. Don't give up hope. God forbid it's a homicide, but if things move in that direction, for certain people, the only 2 possibilities seem to be Cutter or me.
Yep.
You.
Why?
I asked, but it was almost rhetorical. How could Santos think I would kill my wife? He didn't answer right away, but I could see from his expression that Ridd had been wondering the same thing.
You want my honest opinion?
Yeah, I do. I've dealt with these FBI types before. The rising stars who make it all the way to the behavioral analysis unit and do one serial killer investigation after another. The burnout rate in my job is ridiculous, but compared to those guys, it's nothing. They have the worst rate in law enforcement. There comes a point in time when you finally crawled inside the head of 1 too many psychopaths, looked into the eyes of too many lifeless victims of the worst. Santos hasn't told me this, but I'm guessing that's why she got reassigned to Miami. The Bureau is hoping that a little time in the field will breathe some life back into her.
So what are you saying? She got demoted and she's taking it out on me?
No, you're completely missing my point. I think Santos has written so many profiles of sexually sadistic serial killers that her brain is pre-programmed. Something about Angelina doesn't fit in that program. I gave it some consideration before responding. The hum of the generators was the only sound around us. I guess if you flip it around, look at the positive side, I should take some comfort in this.
Comfort?
Yeah, it's actually a good thing, right? One of the best trained minds in the country seems convinced that my wife was not the victim of a serial killer.
That is a positive, said Ridd.
But it raises a question, right? If it wasn't Cutter, and if it wasn't me, then where is she?
I promise you this, Abe. I won't stop looking until I have an answer.
One of the generators roared, sending a surge of industrial light across the highway and down the embankment toward the search and rescue team trawling for another body in the Everglades. An answer. Let's hope it's one I can live with, I said. Chapter 29. Brian Belter was with his best client at his favorite restaurant in his most beloved place in all of the Dominican Republic. And he was miserable. Belter was one of eight at a dinner hosted by Alberto Cortinas and his wife at La Piazzetta, a gourmet Italian restaurant in Altos de Chavón, an ambitious recreation of a 16th-century Mediterranean village that sits high on a bluff in La Romana. The pumpkin risotto and filet of hake were memorable, but truly unforgettable were the views of the river valley far below. A torchlit table beneath the stars out on the stone terrace was highly coveted, especially on a Saturday night, but the privileged guests in the Cortinas party had the entire terrace to themselves.
Mas vino, Señor Belter.
His wine glass was empty, but he was at his limit.
No, gracias.
The drinking had started on the golf course at noon. One Cuba Libre led to another. Belter was a scratch golfer and had birdied the first two holes, but it was downhill from there. Teeth of the Dog was the premier course in the Caribbean, a challenge even for sober professionals. It was built on a bed of coral, which made for unforgiving hazards, all created by Dominican work crews whose only tools were sledgehammers, pickaxes, and chisels. By the eighth hole, Belter needed a pickaxe to find his tee shot. He'd been drinking rum and cokes like Kool-Aid, and no one had warned him that it was Bacardi 151. The pressure behind his eyes was almost unbearable. He was starting to feel nauseous. Maybe it was the alcohol. Maybe it was the altitude. Maybe it was Tyler Tompkins.
Agua, por favor, he told the waiter.
Alberto Cortinas was seated at the head of a rectangular table, holding court for the six most influential Dominican lawmakers, all men. With growing opposition to sugar growers in the Everglades, Cortinas was planning to expand production in the DR. The goal was to convince the Dominican Senate to approve a proposed tax on fructose corn syrup. Big Sugar hated competition. All lawmakers could be persuaded. It would take much more than a round of golf, a pricey restaurant, and a penthouse suite at a world-class resort, even if the room did come with a pair of Latina hookers who could command $5,000 a night in New York City. El hombre con los regalos verde, the man with the green gifts, would visit each of the lawmakers in the morning. Money talked. But not when Alberto Cortinas was anywhere nearby.
I'm not involved, Brian.
A headache of this magnitude made it nearly impossible for Belter to keep up with the lively conversation in Spanish at the other end of the table. His mind needed a break. He excused himself, walked across the stone terrace, and went inside to the restroom. He checked for messages while taking care of business, then went to the homepage for the Miami Tribune. The headline grabbed him, to the point that he nearly dropped his phone in the urinal. Holy shit. He was so engrossed in the article that he forgot to tip the bathroom attendant after washing his hands. He quickly returned to the terrace, went straight to the head of the table, and politely interrupted his client. Cortinas did not look pleased. He was in the middle of one of his favorite stories, the one about the insider at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, who would tip off Alberto whenever the secretary was at his desk getting a blowjob. It was the only time Alberto ever called him because he knew the secretary had no choice but to take his call.
What is it? Alberto asked in English.
I need your attention for just a minute, said Belter. In private. Alberto rose reluctantly and excused himself. Belter led him away from the dining table, across the terrace, out of sight of the guests. They found a quiet place around the stone pillars that marked the entrance to the restaurant. It was a setting out of Shakespeare, Two men of power whispering in the dark, standing across from little shops and artist dens on a narrow cobblestone street, lined with lanterns, wrought iron balconies, and other markings of a Renaissance village.
Abe Beckham's wife has gone missing, said Belter. There's an all-out search about a mile or so from where they found Tyler's body.
Cortinas pulled a cigar from the pocket of his guayabera and snipped off the tip.
That's very sad.
Belter watched him light up, waiting for him to say more. But Cortinas' only concern seemed to be an even burn on his cigar.
Is that all you have to say? Asked Belter. Very sad?
Cortinas took a long drag, the ashes glowing in the night.
This is not something that demands my immediate attention. Don't you see the obvious problem here?
The only problem I see is a table full of guests wondering what the hell is so damned important that you pull me away in the middle of a story.
Belter moved closer, lowering his voice. Tyler Tompkins was murdered. Now Abe Beckham's wife is missing. The media will go nuts on this.
So what? Let them.
You're being way too cavalier.
You make it sound like this is our fault.
It's always our fault,
Belter said, keeping his voice low but speaking with greater urgency. Big Sugar is Florida's all-time favorite whipping boy. Like it or not, we are connected to the circus through Tyler Tompkins.
We've got this covered, Brian. Everything is being taken care of. Some very high-priced techies are at work on Tyler's computer files and emails as we speak.
Dodging one subpoena from the U.S. attorney is not the entire ballgame. This is shaping up to be the infotainment story of the century. It will put my law firm and your companies under the microscope. That's no place to be. You didn't often agree with your old man, but he was dead right about one thing. Big Sugar does better with a low profile.
What do you want me to do, Brian? Turn back the hands of time and make it all go away?
No, but damn it, Alberto!
This isn't just business we're talking about. This is my family, my life!
Agent Santos and that smart-ass detective who came to my office last week know about me and Tyler. Jenny will leave me if that comes out. What am I supposed to tell her? What am I going to tell my kids?
That's really up to you, Brian. But there are a couple of choices.
Cortinas took another long drag on a cigar, a cloud of smoke pouring across his lips and into Belter's face as he spoke.
One, you could tell them that when Tyler called you on her prepaid cell phone, you should have had a prepaid phone of your own, which would have made the numbers untraceable on both ends. But you were too stupid to figure that one out.
Unlike me. Belter froze. Silent.
Or, said Cortinas, you can simply tell them it's been a really lousy week for women who like to fuck Abe Beckham.
Belter looked at him, confused. When it came to insanely arrogant remarks, even he had difficulty telling when Cortinas was serious, half-serious, or just kidding around. Finally, Cortinas smiled, clenching the big cigar in his teeth.
Come, my friend. It's time to return to our guests.
Belter walked with him, but he wanted to pull his client aside, look him in the eye, and find out if he was serious about the prepaid cell phone. If something had been going on between him and Tyler, it was news to Belter. Disturbing news. It wasn't just ego and idle curiosity pulling at him. Once upon a time, Belter had thought he was the only one.
He was about to ask, and a simple follow-up question would have been the most natural thing in the world between two men who'd known each other nearly their entire adult lives. But he followed his instincts, just as he had in so many other dealings with Alberto Cortinas. Better not to know.
The two men returned to the dinner party on the terrace, where Belter laughed with the others about Cortinas interruptus, and the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture. Chapter 30. It was almost 9 in the evening when Victoria knocked on JT's door. Detective Reyes was with her on the front porch. The chain lock was engaged, and JT spoke to them with his face wedged between the door and the frame.
"What do you want?"
"I'm Agent..."
"I know who you are," he said. "You came to my house with Detective Riddell to take my answering machine." "Who's she?"
Reyes introduced herself and showed her badge. "We'd like to talk to you about Angelina," said Victoria.
"I can't talk to you now. I'm watching a movie."
The television was blasting in the background. It sounded like a total guy movie, something high on special effects, perhaps Transformers or Iron Man. "You do know that Angelina has gone missing, right?"
"Yeah, Abe told me."
"And you can't make 5 minutes to talk to us?" He made a face like a teenager caught playing video games after midnight.
"All right. I'll pause it."
His face disappeared, the chain rattled, and the door opened. JT was wearing only a pair of baggy basketball shorts that reached all the way to his knees, no shirt and no shoes. The ankle bracelet was in place, Victoria noted. He led them into the TV room and paused the movie. Victoria's guess had been right on. Iron Man 2.
"Have a seat," said JT.
The woman took the couch. JT fell into a bright orange beanbag chair. The rest of the room was tastefully decorated with a woman's touch, and Victoria would have bet that the orange beanbag was the one piece of furniture that had not been of his late sister's choosing. Victoria used it as a starting point. "Nice apartment, JT. Did your sister pick out all these beautiful things?"
"Yep. Except the beanbag."
"Two for two. Is that your contribution or was that Abe's touch?"
"Beanbag's mine. $2 at a garage sale. Abe never would have brung a piece of shit like this into Samantha's house. He went with whatever she wanted."
The conversation was moving in exactly the right direction. They got along well.
"Oh, hell yeah. Made for each other, if you ask me."
"What makes you say that?" He cast a suspicious look.
"Nothing makes me say it." "What's that supposed to mean anyway? You think I'm on drugs or something?"
"No, I wasn't suggesting."
"You asked what makes me say that. I say it because I think it, not because something made me say it. That's all there is to it. I don't do drugs. You cool with that?"
"Yes, we're cool. I was just trying to understand what you were saying. Abe and Samantha were made for each other, so I guess they never argued." He took a deep breath and his sudden anger seemed to pass.
"Argued? Not really. Not that I saw."
"What about Abe and Angelina?"
"What about them?"
"You ever see them argue?" He hesitated, then answered.
"Yeah, they argued."
"Argued or argue?"
"Is that a trick question?"
"No," she said. "Argued just puts Angelina in the past. Argue, on the other hand..."
"So it is a trick question," he said sharply. "You're trying to trip me up."
"Forget I asked that."
"Forget nothing. Abe's wife is missing, and you show up at my apartment and start asking trick questions. You think I did something to her, don't you?"
"We're just having a conversation."
"Well, how about having a conversation that makes some damn sense? I can't even leave my own apartment. In case you haven't noticed, I'm wearing an ankle bracelet."
He stuck his foot in the air, and Victoria got more than an eyeful. He wasn't wearing any underwear. "You can put your leg down now, JT. He lowered it. "What kind of things do Abe and Angelina argue about?" she asked.
"I don't know. They argue about everything."
"Everything?"
"Not everything, lots of things."
"You've heard them raise their voices?"
"Sure."
Have you ever seen any physicality between them?
You mean, do I watch them have sex?
She knew he was playing dumb. A clear signal that he would rather avoid the question, which only heightened Victoria's interest in hearing the answer. No, I mean physicality, as in Abe raising a hand to her. Abe never hit Angelina.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I'm sure.
She leaned forward, making eye contact with him.
This is important, JT. If Abe has ever hit Angelina, I need to know about it.
He looked right back at her, never breaking eye contact.
Abe never hit her.
Victoria let his answer linger. She had stared down many a witness, many a suspect, many a liar. Polygraph examinations had their place, but sometimes there was nothing like 2 decades of law enforcement experience. JT wasn't lying, at least not in her estimation. Finally, he looked away.
But
she waited a moment, then prompted him.
But what?
He didn't answer, his gaze cast downward.
But what, JT?
He raised his eyes, meeting her stare.
She hits him.
Victoria tried not to react, keeping an even keel.
Angelina hits Abe?
Yeah,
he said matter of fact.
That's what I'm saying.
She nodded slowly.
Now, when you say she hits him, do you mean this has happened on more than one occasion?
Mm-hmm. More than once.
Victoria exchanged glances with Detective Reyes beside her on the couch, and then turned her attention back to JT.
Okay, she said. I want you to tell us all about this, JT.
Chapter 31.
That's simply not true, I said.
It had taken all my strength to look at Agent Santos in the eye and deliver a controlled and level response. I was angry at JT for saying that Angelina hit me. I was furious with Agent Santos for bringing it up on this night, under these circumstances, right across the road from the ongoing search for Angelina's body.
Why would JT lie about this? Asked Santos.
JT had been psycho-calling me for the past 30 minutes, but I just didn't want to take his call. I wish I had. I would have asked him the same question, and I wouldn't have been ambushed by Santos and Detective Reyes.
Why does JT do any of the things he does? I said.
If the court puts an ankle bracelet on him, he'll tell you the government is spying on him. If there's a serial killer named Cutter in South Florida, he'll tell you he used to cut sugarcane. He says a lot of things to see how people react.
So that's your answer? He lies for the sake of lying?
How to explain JT to an outsider? He's in his own world. We visited his father in the nursing home Friday, and JT denied that he was his father's son. It's not lying. He knows he's not fooling anyone. These are the things he does. Sometimes he'll say the exact opposite of what he and everyone else knows is true.
So if JT's brother-in-law hits his wife, JT might say the wife hits his brother-in-law.
I should have seen that coming, but I hadn't, which only confirmed my level of stress.
I've never hit a woman in my life. There's an easy way to settle this.
Yeah, you could stop playing the abusive husband card and find out what really happened to my wife.
I could.
Or you could take a polygraph.
No, I said firmly, no hesitation.
Glad you took some time to think about it, she said sarcastic.
I'm not going to play this game, I said. If I allow you to treat me like a suspect, you will continue to treat me like one. If I pass the polygraph, then you'll want a strip search to see if I have any bruises or scratches. If the strip search shows nothing, you'll want to take another polygraph. If I pass again,
you'll find another angle. Every minute you spend trying to build a bullshit case against me is a minute wasted. Go find the real killer. I froze, realizing what I just said. Santos caught it. Killer. She didn't have to ask, but I could see the question written all over her face. How do you know she's dead? Think about that polygraph, she said. The answer is no. Sorry to hear that. She started away, but I stopped her. Hey, what is going on here? Excuse me? This started as a hunt for a serial killer. Now it's a witch hunt, and I'm the guy tied to the stake. I've been standing out here for 2 hours, watching and praying as search and rescue does its work. But I've also been wondering about you. I even made a phone call. You're checking up on me? I Googled you on my iPhone and read about that serial killer investigation you did with help from the Miami Tribune. It occurred to me that you must have known the old crime reporter at the Tribune. He left about 5 years ago. 22 years on the beat. Pulitzer Prize winner. Really good guy. Covered my first capital trial and lots of others. His name's Mike Poston. She said nothing, but I could see in her eyes that Mike's name meant something to her. Anyway, I gave Mike a call. I said, you know what he says? No idea. Haven't seen him in years. Well, Mike's bet is that your gut, heart, and mind aren't telling you that Abe Beckham is your man. He thinks someone is pushing your buttons. He says that the Victoria Santos he knows is much smarter than this. She took a step closer, looking me in the eye. The Victoria that Mike knows was a 32-year-old newbie. No one is pushing my buttons. I'm just telling you what Mike thinks. She seemed to be searching for a response, but then changed her mind. She turned and started away. Hey, Santos, I said. She took two more steps, as if wishing she could drop the whole Mike conversation, but something made her stop and listen to what I had to say. What would that 32-year-old newbie think? It was dark in the shadows, away from the portable light trees, and I couldn't really read Santos's expression. My sense, however, was that my last punch had landed. But Santos did not go down easily. She came right back at me, stopping on the other side of the tape. That newbie would think exactly what I think, said Santos, a definite edge to her tone. It might take her a little longer to get there, because of her inexperience. But her conclusion would be the same. Our serial killer has yet to strike out of Palm Beach County. Cutter didn't kill Tyler Tompkins, and he didn't take your wife either. Before I could even begin to respond, she turned sharply and left. I wanted to duck under the tape and ask the flood of follow-up questions that were suddenly coming to mind, but contamination of a crime scene with my footprints was not something I needed to add to my list of troubles. More to the point, I knew she was done talking to me. I let it go for now, watching in silence as Santos walked back into the glow of the search and rescue vapor lights. Chapter 32. Victoria felt a chill as she walked across the Tamiami Trail through stopped traffic and toward the search and recovery team leader on the bank. It wasn't nearly as cold as it had been on the morning of Tyler Tompkins' recovery, but it was only 10 p.m., and temperatures dropped fast in the Everglades after midnight. Victoria had tried not to show it, but Beckham had gotten to her. Mike Poston had been the first low blow, and then he'd hit even lower. What would that 32-year-old newbie think? It was an interesting question. She would probably think a lot of things. That task force coordinator for the Miami field office was the last thing she would be at the stage of her career. That burnout would never get her. That it had been true back then, and that it would be true forever. At least from the standpoint of homicide statistics. The most dangerous place for a woman to be was in a relationship with a man. But those were not excuses for losing her cool. Sparring with Abe Beckham, speaking out of anger, was no way to share her professional opinion that Tyla had been murdered by someone other than Cutter. And there was the whole Mike Poston thing. A married man who faced temptation and remained true to his wife. Beckham could have learned a thing or two from him. Her cell rang. It was from the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Department. Her task force contact was calling at 10:30 on a Saturday night, which was not a good sign. She braced herself and took the call. "What is it, Juan?" she asked.
"Looks like we have another victim," he said.
She swallowed the news bitterly, internalizing it as the price every law enforcement officer paid for moving too slowly to catch a monster.
"Where?"
"Canefield off Route 27. That's a good ways west of the other recovery sites, but still on Cortina's property."
"Do you have an ID yet?"
"No. The body was found nude, no identification on her. White female, possibly in her 30s, is all I can tell you at this point."
"Cutter's signature?"
"Yep," he said. "Signature confirmed." Ash on the face. She glanced in Abe's direction, still on the phone.
"Juan, do me a favor. Check the Angelina Beckham bolo that went out today from Miami-Dade. There's a photograph with it, just for comparison."
"Okay.
And Juan," she added.
"Yeah.
Call me right back on that. I mean right back, as soon as you can."
"Will do," he said.
Victoria hung up, but she didn't put her phone away. She held onto it, waiting for the vibration in her hand to signal a callback.
The light breeze sent ripples across the illuminated waters of the Black Everglades, and it made her heart pound to think that, in a matter of moments, she might officially call off the search. Or not. Either way, she would be on her way to Palm Beach soon. It was going to be a long and painful night.
Chapter 33. Agent Santos had me worried. I watched her take a phone call, then hurry across the highway, jump in her car, and speed away, not toward the Everglades, but toward Florida's Turnpike. Within minutes, I noticed a dramatic change in the search activities. Scuba divers popped to the surface and came to shore. Searchlights no longer swept the sawgrass. Cadaver dogs obeyed the sit command. A squad car pulled away, then another. Law enforcement had reduced itself to clusters of idle conversation along the canal, the sense of urgency dissipating in the darkness. Way too many people standing around, nothing to do. I continued to respect the police perimeter, but I wasn't sure how much longer I could stay put on the onlooker side of the Tamiami Trail. I couldn't spot Ridd anywhere in the crowd. I left a voicemail message. "I don't like what I'm seeing. Call me right back. What is going on?" I watched the traffic crawl past me, my heart in my throat. I studied the long line of approaching vehicles, looking for the medical examiner's van, looking for something I did not want to see. My phone vibrated with Ridd's callback, and he told me about Palm Beach. It was suddenly hard to breathe.
"Tell me it's not her," I said.
"We don't know yet."
"Don't bullshit me!"
"Abe, I'm telling you what I know."
I watched him cross the highway, his cell pressed to his ear, and as he approached, we put away our phones. Even though he was standing just on the other side of the yellow tape, it was difficult to see his face. All but one of the light trees along the road had been cut off, and we were standing in the darkness that was the Everglades.
"They have Angelina's photograph," I said. "Can't somebody make a comparison?"
Ridd looked at the ground. "It was a particularly vicious attack, I'm told. Officers on the scene confirmed traces of ash, but even that wasn't easy. The face is not really recognizable."
"Oh, God."
I tried to hold it together.
"What about fingerprints?"
The investigation team must have pulled a set of prints from Angelina's hairbrush or blow dryer. Some damn thing.
They did, said Ridd. But again, given the severity of the wounds, not sure fingerprints will give us an answer. My mind raced to another place I didn't want to go, and I tried to shake the horrific image of stumps at the wrists, no hands, no fingerprints. How fast can we get DNA results? It will be on a rush basis, not just for victim identification, but for the killer's DNA, too. But the lab can't be started until DNA is collected, which has to be done carefully. It won't happen till the body is in the medical examiner's office.
The body. I knew it like no one else.
Ridd was on the same page. Abe, the most helpful thing to do right now is come up with a list of distinctive markings. I'll pass them along to the Palm Beach ME.
The mole on her inner thigh, the freckles on her shoulders, the details that not even Angelina knew about Angelina.
Sure, we could make a list in the car.
I need to go, I said. I drove straight up the turnpike, fast and alone. Ridd had to stay behind. The search along Tamiami Trail was on hold, not shut down. I took that as a good sign. You take what you can get. I was dictating into my phone up to number 14 on my list of distinctive Angelina body parts when Ed Brumble called from Belglade.
You may know this, he said, but the police found a body in the cane fields about a mile from my house.
By house, I knew he meant the legal aid clinic.
I heard. I'm headed up to the medical examiner's office now.
Is it?
We don't know yet.
I'll meet you there, he said, no hesitation.
That's not necessary.
Who's with you?
No one. Abe, don't do this alone.
I'll meet you there.
I thanked him and kept driving. I finished my Angelina list while crossing the Miami-Dade County line.
I was passing one of those too-far-west developments that had sprouted up on the edge of civilization during the building boom, where new residents soon learned the mosquito's indifference to the end of suburbia and the start of the Everglades. I emailed my list to Ridd, then made the call I was dreading. Angelina's mother. Margaret and I had promised to keep each other informed. Angelina's father answered her phone.
Margaret's asleep, he told me. She was going crazy when I got here.
I gave her an Ambien. I told him where I was headed. The silence on the line made me wonder if my phone had dropped the call, but finally he spoke. Should Margaret and I meet you there?
I don't think that's a good idea, Jake.
Are you sure?
I struggled to find a positive spin.
We have multiple fronts to cover. If this is not Angelina, the search to find her alive will kick right back up again. We need family in Miami-Dade County.
Right, that makes sense.
I'll call you as soon as I know, I said.
We hung up. I drove faster. Chapter 34. I reached the medical examiner's office just before midnight. Ed was waiting outside the entrance. We walked inside together, through the pneumatic doors and down the hallway. I heard crying from the lobby ahead of us. Not little sniffles. Great, racking grief, the kind of wailing that attends only one misery on earth. A mother's loss of her child. I stopped at the end of the hall, unable to enter the brightly lit lobby. A handful of chairs lined the far wall. Seated in one was a man about Jake's age, consoling the woman next to him. She had the Palm Beach look, a well-dressed and attractive woman who could have easily passed for one of my mother-in-law's girlfriends. Agent Santos was seated beside her, holding her hand. Santos spotted me, excused herself from the couple, and whispered as she came toward me, "It's not your wife." There was no serious sense of relief. I suddenly felt selfish, self-centered. It hit me between the eyes, the fact that we were dealing with a serial killer, which by definition meant multiple victims and exponential grief. Other families were suffering.
The sobbing mother of Cutter's latest victim leaned on her husband's shoulder. I wanted to walk over and hold them both up.
I wasn't jerking you around, said Santos. We just confirmed the identification. I needed to tell them before I told you.
I understand.
I've instructed Riddell to resume the search in Miami-Dade.
You should go now.
Okay, I'll let Angelina's parents know. Can you make that call outside, please? I don't want these folks to overhear.
Sure,
I said. Santos went back to the grieving parents. Ed followed me down the hall toward the exit.
That's some good news, said Ed.
Yeah.
For us.
We kept walking.
By the way, Vernon Gallagher didn't pan out.
Vernon who?
Remember? The Michael Phelps of cane cutting. The old cutter Tyla Tompkins might have been talking about in her message to you.
Right, right.
I really thought there was something fishy about the car accident that killed the state rep, especially the way all the investigative records were sealed. But I talked to Conrad's widow. It turns out that the Conrad family got the record sealed, not Big Sugar. Conrad was drunk as shit and driving too fast when he came up on the burning field. The fire jumped the road, and that was that. It crashed.
Ed was wandering so far off track that I could barely follow.
That's a shame.
My point is that I don't think the car crash has anything to do with the crime that Tyler was trying to tell you about.
Agreed, let's drop the whole thing.
No, he said, stopping me. I didn't mean we should give up. If Tyler was trying to tip you off about a crime committed by Cortina Sugar, we definitely need to find out what it was.
Ed, right now, all I want to do is update my in-laws. I started down the hall, walking faster. He kept up.
Hear me out on this, okay? I think the crime Tyler was trying to tell you about has something to do with the land deal that our law firm worked on.
My footfall struck the rubber mat. The doors opened automatically and we continued outside.
The land deal?
4 years ago, Big Sugar cut a $1 billion deal to sell farmland back to the state of Florida. It was way over market price, but the environmentalists went along with it because the plan was to retire all those acres from sugar production and return the Everglades to a natural state. But then Big Sugar got the politicians to lease the same land back to them for another 20 years of sugar production at some ridiculously low sweetheart rental rate. It's outright thievery.
We were outside the building. I tried my phone, zero bars.
Damn it!
I followed the sidewalk along the front of the building, searching for reception. The parking lot was around the corner. Ed kept stride.
So this land deal...
Ed, enough, I said, annoyed.
What does a land deal have to do with anything?
Stay with me, said Ed. I'm sure no one has figured this out yet, but I can show you a map. This serial killer has dumped each of his Palm Beach victims in a cane field. So far, every single one of those fields is a leased back parcel.
I stopped, incredulous.
Are you out of your mind? What do you think this is, the Da Vinci Code?
Huh?
Ed, I don't want to hear about a sweetheart land deal.
You're missing the point. It all ties in with the serial killer.
I think there's a message here.
I walked faster still, but an absurd image came to mind of an old cartoon that my mentor had once taped to his door until Carmen made him take it down. Two detectives staring at a city map, pushpins marking each crime scene, the dots spelling out, fuck you, and one detective asking the other, you think there's a pattern here? I checked my phone, still no reception. I needed to get around to the other side of the building. I kept walking.
Abe, are you listening to what I'm saying? Not anymore.
I thought you came here out of friendship. Instead, you're bending my ear about a lawsuit? We can nail these guys once and for all, Abe. I'm not interested.
Abe, you and me, a team. We can beat Big Sugar. That's your thing, not mine, Ed. Make it your thing, damn it. Cutter isn't the only murderer in town, you know.
These sugar baron bastards are killing the Everglades, and they're getting away with it. Ed, I have bigger things on my mind. My wife is missing, and I honestly don't give a shit.
I stopped cold. We had just rounded the corner of the building and nearly collided with a television news crew. An appalled reporter was staring right at me. I had been yelling. The part the reporter had heard was completely out of context, and the cameraman had heard it too. I was about to explain, but she wouldn't give me a chance, at least not off camera. At the snap of her fingers, the video was rolling. "Excuse me, sir," she said. "Aren't you Abe Beckham?" The microphone was in my face. The red eye of the camera was staring at me. Another man might have learned his lesson from the one word lie in Carmen's office. The one about how long it had been since my last encounter with Tyler Tompkins. But I was desperate for a quick out. "No," I said, and I hurried to my car. Chapter 35. I couldn't go home, not tonight. My house was still a crime scene, and the investigators would return in the morning. If I planned on being there, I needed sleep. I headed for JT's apartment. I called Angelina's parents. Her father was relieved, but he asked the obvious question. "So where do they think she is? We have to keep looking. I know we have the tip line through the police, but I want to offer a reward to go with it. You know, anyone with information, please call us. No questions asked, maybe. How much do you think? 25,000? 50,000? I don't know. How do people come up with these numbers? How indeed? Is it what someone's worth? What the family can afford? Another question with no answer. A reward is a good idea, Jake. We'll figure out the amount in the morning." I told him not to give up hope. He told me the same, and we hung up. I slapped myself across the face 6 or 7 times on the drive down the turnpike just to stay awake. They didn't hurt as much as the next call. I answered only because I thought the Palm Beach area code could have been from someone on the task force. Somehow that TV reporter had hunted down my cell number. "Mr. Beckham, I know that was you." My first instinct was to hang up, but damage control had its place. "I apologize, that was very rude of me, but this is a difficult time. Please respect my privacy." "I heard what you said. But I'd like to give you an opportunity to explain." I needed to be smart here. "I tell you what, Ms. What's your name?" Heather Hunt. "Of course it is. I love my wife, and I'm doing everything humanly possible to find her. What you heard was completely out of context. Now, if you promise to leave me alone, I promise that the next time I have an update for the media, you'll be the first person I call." "Mr. Beckham, I don't mean to sound insensitive, but your wife is a Miami story." "I want to talk to you about Cortina Sugar." "What?" "After you ran off, literally, Mr. Brumble explained what you meant when you said you didn't give a you-know-what. He said that right before Tyler Tompkins was killed, she contacted you about criminal activity and a cover-up at Cortina Sugar." "Damn it, Ed." From the get-go, I'd made it clear to him that Tyler's message was confidential. "I'm sorry, I can't talk to you about that." "Mr. Brumble gave me your cell and said you'd be happy to explain." "Shit, Ed!" "No, I can't." "So you really don't give a shit about a possible connection between Tyler Tompkins and criminal activity at Cortina Sugar?" "I really have to go now. I'm sorry, Hunter." Heather Hunt. I'm driving down the turnpike at 70 miles per hour. I'm tired and I'm talking on the phone. This is dangerous. Good night. She called right back, but I ignored it. I fumbled with the phone to dial Ed. Yes, he'd come out after midnight to support me, and perhaps I could have found a more delicate way to say that finding Angelina was a higher priority than suing Big Sugar. But blabbering to a reporter about Tyler and me was pretty harsh payback. The call went to voicemail.
My mind suddenly filled with thoughts of Ed on the other line, feeding Heather Hunt more quotes about Tyler, me, and whatever lawsuit he was trying to build against Cortina Sugar. I left a message. Ed, I trusted you to keep it confidential that Tyler may have been a whistleblower. Please, not another word to the media. You're compromising a homicide investigation. That's all I have to say. I put the phone away, but my anger simmered all the way back to Miami. Maybe some of it was misdirected. There was still my brother-in-law's mess to deal with. It was 1:30 in the morning when I reached JT's complex. I flew over three sets of speed bumps, pulled my car into the same spot I'd parked in when Samantha and I had lived here, and dropped my keys in the same dish by the front door. Two trips to and from Palm Beach in the last 16 hours, and that had been the easy part of my day. I was exhausted, but sleep was not my first order of business. The Cortina's connection had me wound up, but I couldn't waste energy on it. I had to stay focused. I still wanted to hear JT's version of his conversation with Agent Santos, and I didn't care if I was waking him up in the middle of the night to get it. I went into his room, switched on the lamp, and nudged him till he woke. "Did you tell Agent Santos that Angelina hits me?" He blinked, trying to get his bearings.
"What?"
I peeled back the blankets, pulled him up from his pillow, and sat him on the edge of the mattress facing me. He was wearing his usual basketball shorts and t-shirt. I repeated my question, trying not to sound too accusatory. But at this stage of the game, I was losing my bedside manner. His eyes were adjusting to the light, but that wasn't the only reason for the slow response. Finally, he answered.
"I might have,"
he said.
"JT, why would you do that?"
His leg got restless, his right heel bouncing up and down on the floor like a jackhammer. The scram bracelet rattled on his ankle. "I'm not going to get mad, I promise." Both legs were going now. The bed was actually squeaking. I needed to back off a bit. "JT, breathe for me, okay? I want you to relax and tell me why you told Agent Santos that Angelina hits me." He inhaled through his mouth, exhaled through his nose. It seemed backward to me, but so did most of JT's world.
"I was just trying to help."
"Help? Help who?"
"You."
"Me? How was that going to help me?"
"She was trying to get me to say that you hit her. She didn't believe me when I said no. So, I don't know, Abe, I just went too far. You know, people push me and I push back. So it was like, oh yeah, you think Abe hits Angelina? That's not only bullshit, it's double bullshit. Angelina hits him. In your face, lady."
In a weird JT way, it made sense. He was breathing so hard that there was a whistling through his nose on each exhale. "JT, don't hyperventilate." His breathing slowed, but the restless legs continued. "It's nice that you want to help me," I said, "but it doesn't help to say that Angelina hit me. Agent Santos will turn that around and say that this was a violent relationship. Angelina hit me one too many times, and I finally hit back, and Angelina ended up missing, or worse."
"Is that what happened?"
"No, JT, shit, no!
Don't yell at me, Abe!"
He sprang to his feet. I recoiled defensively, but JT went right past me. His body was simply responding to that uncontrollable urge to pace the floor. Innocent enough, but it brought back Angelina's words to me. "He scares me, Abe." "JT, have you been taking your pills every day?"
"Uh-huh. Yeah."
He was in constant motion, back and forth at the foot of the bed, from one end of the room to the other.
"Are you sure? Don't call me no liar, Abe."
"I'm just asking because I know you want to help me, right?"
"Yeah, yeah,"
he said, but his words were just grunts. "JT, the best way you can help me right now is to take care of yourself. Can you do that for me?"
"Wanna help, wanna help, wanna help, that's all."
"JT, can you promise me that?"
I just wanted to help, that's all I was trying to do, but now I fucked up everything, and no one will ever want my help again. I should have just said no, go away, I can't talk now, see you later, bitchy FBI woman who I caught looking up my shorts at my black dick.
I went to him, but he was pacing too furiously. If I didn't do something fast, he'd be skipping across the room, and as funny as people thought that sounded, there was nothing funny about it.
I shouldn't have said nothing, Abe!
Don't worry about it. I need you to calm down, okay?
I'm just stupid!
JT, come on.
Stupid, stupid, stupid!
He said, slapping his forehead with each stupid.
JT, stop it!
I was so loud that I'd startled myself, but it didn't faze JT. He dropped to the floor and started working at the ankle bracelet.
We gotta get this thing off me, Abe! Don't! I can't wear this shit no more!
This was trouble we didn't need. I didn't need. Instinctively, I lunged toward him before we had a swarm of squad cars in the parking lot and the police beating on the door. My foot caught the corner of the bed and I fell forward. My reflex was to throw a stiff arm to break my fall, and I banged my tricep so hard on the bedpost that I practically saw stars.
Damn it, JT!
He didn't hear, didn't even notice me. My arm was killing me, but the problem was the ankle bracelet.
Got to get this fucking thing off me, Abe!
I was desperate. I had one card to play, one I'd been holding for 19 months. I wasn't sure I could actually pull it off, but if ever there would be a time to try, this was it. I started singing. I was off key and my voice cracked, partly because I was a terrible singer, mostly because I wasn't doing justice to a special memory. It was a song that I'd heard Samantha sing to her brother in bad situations, some worse than this. Samantha had a beautiful voice. It was no surprise that it had worked for her. I was doing the best I could. Can you sing it with me, JT? I sang the first verse alone, lacking the power the composer had intended, sounding not at all like the choir at JT and Samantha's old church. But it was enough to make JT stop pacing and sit on the edge of the mattress. I didn't know the second verse, so I started over, and JT joined me. God gives me a rainbow after a storm. All winter, God tells me it'll get warm. Through hard times, His grace, in good times, His grace. Makes me grateful, so grateful. I'm grateful He's great. Be grateful. We sang it twice. JT went quiet. No more pacing, no restless legs. The room was oddly still, a rarity in my life with JT, and I savored it. Try to go back to sleep, I told him. JT climbed into the bed and slid under the sheets. I switched off the lamp and started toward the door. Abe, he called in the darkness. I stopped in the doorway.
What are you grateful for?
He asked. The question cut right through me, sliced me in two. Half of me inside a room that was thick with memories of Samantha. Half out there, somewhere, searching for Angelina. Good night, JT, I said, as I closed the door. I made up the couch and lay in the darkness. Even with JT's bedroom door closed, I could hear him snoring. But that wasn't what kept me awake. I couldn't close my eyes without going back to the hospital. I closed them anyway. It had been a hot summer morning, but Samantha was unaware. We were in a hospital in name only. It was hospice care. And even though everyone meant well, my head was going to explode if I heard the words, "Make her comfortable," one more time. Samantha had been in and out of sleep, brought on by painkillers. I was half asleep myself in the chair beside her bed when her eyes opened.
Abe.
What, honey? She waved me closer. I leaned over the rail.
Promise me something,
she whispered. I thought it might be our Ryan O'Neill and Ally McGraw moment, our own personal love story, where my dying wife tells me that she wants me to remarry. Anything, I said.
Promise me that you will look after JT.
I took her hand, her bony hand. Okay,
She would have propped herself up on an elbow, but she lacked the strength. She looked straight into my eyes. No, don't just say okay. Tell it to me. Say, Samantha, I promise you I will look after JT. I swallowed hard. I was trying not to squeeze her fingers too tightly. She seemed so fragile, but she was crushing mine with whatever strength she had left. Samantha, I promise you I will look after JT. A peacefulness seemed to wash over her. She let go of my hand, settled into her pillow, and closed her eyes. It wasn't the last thing I said to my wife, but I'm pretty sure, in fact, I'm certain, that those were the last words Samantha Vine ever heard.
Chapter 36. I slept till 7. The music woke me. Be grateful. JT had the Gospel Revival Choir version of our song blasting on the old CD player. It was Sunday morning indeed. My arm felt sore as I pushed myself up from the couch, but it was no big deal. I was lucky I hadn't broken my neck the way I had fallen. I checked my phone. I had 11 messages from Heather, Hunter, whatever her name was. I deleted all of them. Abe, can you go shopping for me today? I got hardly nothing left to eat. Yeah, that was right at the top of my list. Sounded like a great job for one of the many people who had asked if there was anything they could do to help. JT, I just went shopping for you on Friday. I think it was contaminated. I had to put most of it down the disposal.
Really?
Really.
I took a deep breath. Be grateful. I'll take care of it.
Can you go now?
No, I can't go now, JT. I'm really hungry.
We ordered pizza.
Yes, at 7 in the morning.
There was a place on South Beach that only delivered after 4 a.m. Living in the city where people partied in shifts had its advantages. I checked in with Rid. The search along the Tamiami Trail had been scaled back but was ongoing. It would wrap up by noon. They didn't have the manpower to search beyond the 1 mile bridge area. I called Angelina's friend Sloan. By 8:30, she had 40 volunteers to walk the trail. We met at the parking lot east of the bridge. It was mostly women, lots of broad hats, water bottles, and sunscreen. Sloan played camp counselor.
I want 2 lines, single file, she said to the group. 1 line will walk the north shoulder and the other walks the south. Don't touch or pick up anything. If you see anything, I mean anything, dial my cell. Don't play cop. Let the police check it out. How far are we walking? Someone asked. As far as we can go.
Someone in the crowd pointed out that the trail was 275 miles long, and I overheard one or two others muttering something to the effect that she, presumably Sloane, must be out of her fucking mind.
If you get tired, just let me know, said Sloane. We have a couple of volunteers with SUVs who will run a shuttle back to the staging area.
That drew a collective sigh of relief from the volunteers. Off they went. I didn't. I flagged down Rid. We talked near the bridge, just outside the police tape. Is Santos coming today? I asked.
She's in Palm Beach.
Pardon the stupid question, but are they sure this latest homicide was Cutter?
Yeah.
Ash on the face. White woman with black boyfriend. Other indicators that... Sorry, pal, I can't share with you.
I understand.
The thing is, said Rid, this makes it even more unlikely that Angelina is one of Cutter's victims. That's not his pattern, 2 in 1 weekend. It's not any serial killer's pattern. Some of them sleep for days after a kill. That's the typical profile, I said, and I knew something about this.
Not that I'm hoping this cutter has something to do with Angelina, but serial killers can become spree killers, especially at the end of their run.
True, but spree killer ain't where Santo's head is at.
Is she still looking at me?
My bet was 50-50 that he would answer.
She hasn't ruled you out. That's all I can say.
I need more, I said.
Rid didn't answer. But he didn't shut me down either.
I spoke to JT, I said. He told Santos that Angelina hits me.
I know, said Rid. That's not helpful. For you, I mean.
There's a good explanation. Basically, JT was talking shit. You know that, and I know that. I need your help to make Santos understand it, too.
Rid looked away toward the line of volunteers streaming across the bridge like army ants. Did he give her any specifics?
No. He just said, Angelina hits me.
When Santos pressed for details, he told her that she needed to ask me about it. Did she ask you?
Yeah.
Did you tell her?
I told her it wasn't true.
He looked right at me.
So you didn't tell her that Angelina broke your nose?
I caught my breath.
That was 3 years earlier. I broke my nose playing basketball.
No, you didn't, Abe. That was your story.
Nuke and you went up for a rebound and his elbow caught you square in the nose. That shit happens all the time in the car for Jim. Except I talked to Nuke. I know it didn't happen. I'd given Nuke a new pair of LeBron high tops to tell that story. Apparently, his memory did not extend beyond the life of the shoes.
That was a long time ago, I said.
Not that long, said Rid.
Angelina and I dated for almost 3 years, lived together for over half that time. It was hard on her when things broke off. When she found out I was leaving her for Samantha, a black chick, he said it, not me. She didn't take it well.
Didn't take it well. Abe, she smashed your face in.
It really wasn't.
Wasn't her fault? Is that what you were going to say? What the shit, Abe?
Now you sound like the battered women who go back home to a husband who's so sorry for what he did, then end up getting carried out the front door in a body bag.
I knew those women. I'd prosecuted their husbands.
That wasn't Angelina and me.
There's been nothing like that since we got married.
What about the smashed beer bottle?
There's been nothing, I said, more forceful.
Okay. Whatever. He looked away again.
Hey, I said, forcing him to make eye contact.
Santos doesn't need to know about the nose.
It took a while, and for the longest time, I thought I might not have him. But finally I saw that look on his face, the one that told me we were friends, not just colleagues, and that we had an understanding.
Nosebleeds, he said. Part of fucking round ball.
Thank you, man.
I thank you very much.
Chapter 37. Victoria wasn't in Palm Beach. She was in Miami, meeting with the chief assistant to the U.S. attorney, Matthew Lewis. In any organization, no one works longer hours than the chief assistant to the top banana, and the U.S. attorney's office was no exception. Lewis arrived early and stayed late, routinely working weekends and holidays, occasionally stepping out for a cigarette. They talked at a patio table in the courtyard outside the federal building, a handful of dead cigarettes in the ashtray between them. Smoking was not allowed in the building, and this was the chief assistant's regular spot.
Got a sugar war brewing, Victoria said.
Lewis smiled and lit another cigarette. Early in his career, Lewis had been one of the hard-nosed government lawyers in the Save the Everglades lawsuit against the state of Florida for failure to enforce clean water regulations against Big Sugar. No one in Tallahassee would admit it, but Cortinas controlled the state officials who negotiated the settlement.
What'd the bastards do this time? Drown day-old kittens?
She smiled a little, then turned serious.
I'm not sure where this is headed, but the Ed Brumble segment on the news this morning got me thinking.
Lewis took a drag on his cigarette.
Who?
Farm aid lawyer in Belglade. Spent the last 20 years of his career trying to nail Big Sugar for something. He's a doofus, but we all know the story about the blind pig and the acorn.
There actually may be a Big Sugar connection to my Cutter investigation.
Tell me.
Basically, we have 5 victims recovered from the sugarcane fields in Palm Beach County. No problem linking them all to one killer. Then we have 2 outliers in Miami-Dade. One is Tyler Tompkins, the lawyer from Belter, Benning, and Lang. I'm almost 100% sure that Cutter is not her killer.
Copycat?
Maybe. The other is Abe Beckham's wife, still missing. Search is ongoing, and we have no body to examine, so I can't be as sure about her. But my guess? Not Cutter.
Where does the sugar war fit in?
Brian Belter was sleeping with Tyler Tompkins. I have no doubt about that. And we have a voicemail message from Tyler Tompkins to Abe Beckham. It sounds like she was offering up incriminating information about the business activities of Cortina Sugar. Tompkins, it turns out, did some of the most sensitive legal work, both for the companies and for the Cortinas family.
So Tompkins was in a position to destroy Brian Belter's marriage and do serious damage to his best client.
You got it.
Lewis flicked the ash.
So your theory is what? Belter turned into Dexter?
No, my theory is that Belter had a big problem that could be solved only by getting rid of Tyler Tompkins. Not only was Cutter in the news, but the bodies were turning up in his client's sugarcane fields. Maybe it put an idea in his head. Kill Tyler and make it look like Cutter did it.
Lewis thought for a moment.
I've met Belter. He doesn't strike me as a machete-swinging kind of guy.
Cortina still uses cane cutters outside the States. It wouldn't take much to fly one over, have him do the deed, and pay him enough pesos to keep his mouth shut.
Maybe.
Some of these cutters are of questionable background. One they hired in Brazil was an ex-con on parole. Put his girlfriend in a coma for 5 days when he hit her over the head with the flat side of his cane knife. A little turn of his wrist, and she would have been dead.
Could be your serial killer.
He's back in jail. But there are tens of thousands of cane cutters in Central America, South America, the Caribbean. All Belter needed to find was one who was willing to whack Tyler Tompkins.
What have you done on this so far?
One of your AUSAs helped with a subpoena. We want access to Tyler's computers and emails at BBNL.
That'll be a dogfight.
Yeah. Maggie Green is running major interference.
I'll look into that. But how do you connect Belter to the disappearance of Beckham's wife? Why would Belter have anything to do with her?
He wouldn't.
So, who are you looking at there?
Abe Beckham.
Ah, the husband. The 21st century Colonel Mustard.
What?
Sorry, I played too much Clue as a kid. My question is, other than the fact that he's the husband, why would you think he did it?
I'm pretty sure he was having an affair with Tyler Tompkins.
Lewis shook his head.
So a woman puts her career at risk to call him with a crime tip and he can't keep his wick dry.
He always was an arrogant son of a bitch.
Do you know Beckham?
Can't stand him.
Typical state prosecutor with the my dick's bigger than your dick mentality. Thinks all feds are white-collar pansies and the only real prosecutors are the ones doing murder, rape, robbery.
He didn't really strike me that way.
Probably because you've got him by the balls.
Are you looking at Beckham for both Tyler Tompkins and his wife?
Looking at him, yes. So that gives you two possibles in the murder of Tyler Tompkins, Belter, and Beckham.